conceived. Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
But oh, yeah. Started to burn many things we found. Too many things. This is Harvey Wasserman back with you another hour in Solartopia, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're going to be talking today with three great people who are involved with the attempted rebuilding of Puerto Rico, which is still being left behind, and with the latest on the horrible fires in Northern California, and they are related. Fire and water, global chaos, climate chaos, it's all from the same source. It's a global catastrophe, just like the deranged lunatic in the White House, and we're going to have to deal with all of that. We have three great guests who have been working with us on Puerto Rico. We had last week's show. We just started to scratch the surface on everything that's happening and not happening down there, unfortunately. Tara, are you with us? Tara, are you there? Not with us yet. Harvard Air, are you with us?
Yes, sir. You betcha.
Okay. And Joel Siegel?
Shalom Aleichem and greetings and salutations from the great city of Charlotte, North Carolina.
And how do we say Shalom Aleichem in Spanish? So we're waiting for Tara. Tara was kept on hold last week, and we wanted to have her back to give us a full report of what's going on down there. And I'm also going to want to talk about the horrible disaster in Northern California, all the incredible death and destruction that we think, many people think now, was caused by the electric power utility, Pacific Gas and Electric. Nothing definite yet, but it's definitely going to be looked at very, very closely in the days, months, and years to come. The fires in Northern California are not yet out. There are still smoke clouds coming from those terrible conflagrations. People are homeless in shelters without places to live, no food. No FEMA, of course. FEMA, I understand, has set up offices where you can go in and apply for help. Isn't that wonderful? But we don't see the mass distribution of masks and other things that are absolutely essential to survival. And, in fact, we had our great guest, Mark Summer, talking to us from the Bay Area last week and the week before about the incredibly destructive air pollution that's poured in to the San Francisco Bay Area, worse than Beijing on a bad day, is what they're saying. It seems to be abating now, but it sounds like a real apocalyptic disaster. Let's get to Puerto Rico. Tara, when Tara comes on the line, please let me know. I understand, like I said, she was kept waiting last week. Harvard Ayers, what is the latest update in the situation in Puerto Rico? What are we looking at right now in terms of human suffering and ecological damage?
Well, I think we're looking at a huge loss of power, of course, which is what our major concern is. And roughly 80% of the people don't still have dependable electrical power. And getting to the villages is still really a pain. It never has exactly gotten worked out right, but it is getting somewhat better. I'm very, very hopeful that this next week will help some more, but that's what I've been hoping for weeks now, and it seems to me that it is improving a little bit with food and water, medical care, and so forth, although we still have this big, huge hospital ship docked off of San Juan, which is basically not got many patients at all. The word doesn't seem to get out, and the people who really need the medical care, especially in areas where their hospitals aren't working, are really having a problem figuring out how to get there. Or there's something going on there that has prevented this from being a real plus.
Well, tell us more about this. I've seen pictures of this ship. Is this an American? Is this a U.S. government ship?
Yes, yes. The ship is a hospital ship. It has something like 900 beds and equivalent numbers of medical experts, which are there to handle all the overspill from hospitals, especially those that don't have adequate power, so that they can run their generators. Well, their generators, so they don't have adequate power for the many things that they need electricity for. Yet I haven't figured out, nor have they apparently, exactly where how these people can get onto this ship and really utilize it to the fullest.
Well, am I missing something here, or is this a completely insane and unconscionable situation? Let me review as best I can without throwing my cell phone through the window here. You're saying that there's a U.S. government hospital ship. It's docked, is it docked, or is it just floating offshore?
Yeah, it's floating just offshore, yeah. I mean, but it's easily reachable by other vessels, and so they can easily handle the transportation from the beach on out to the ship. I mean, it's right there. So to me, it seems like a non-problem, but that has not exactly been a non-problem for the folks.
You know, I'm almost speechless, but on radio it doesn't help to be speechless. So you're saying that there's an American hospital ship. It's not docked, so you can't walk onto it, right?
Oh, that's correct. Right. Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason it's not docked? Why couldn't they just pull the thing into a dock and have people walk on?
You know, I really don't know the real specifics of that. My interest is a little more in the energy problem down there, but I just see, you know, what I see on TV, what I hear from my friends and newspaper articles, and I keep up with it as much as I can.
Joel Siegel, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'll just comment briefly about the ship situation, but it's part of a much larger problem. I would, all of your listeners should Google the Washington Post article, "Trump Can't Stop Complaining About Puerto Rico," and it shows in his policy. Now, this was an article by Armando Valdez Prieto. He's a lawyer and political consultant. He's a former director of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico's Office of Management and Budget. So in that capacity, he was also the governor's authorized representative to FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Authority. And I just want to give you an idea of what they're dealing with there. This is an absolute conscious decision by the Trump administration to throw Puerto Rico's 3.5 million U.S. citizens down the toilet. And I'm sorry to use that kind of language, but this is what's happening. And the administration's actions, they're totally they're not consistent, you know, really with what's happening. So the federal government's response, he says, has been lethargic. He apparently interviewed the Aqueduct and Sewer Authority president in San Juan radio station, Noti Uno, and he said that there are 150 backup generators he had requested from FEMA on the day of the storm to keep potable water flowing into homes. That of that request of 150 backup generators, only 17 had been installed in the 20 days that followed. And Trump said on Monday, Puerto Rico now has more generators, I believe, than any place in the world. There are generators all over the place. So whether it's a ship that's not fulfilling its obligation to provide medical care or backup generators or rebuilding the agricultural sector or their electric grid, FEMA, as we heard on our phone call that we have with our Puerto Rican partners every Wednesday, what they're saying is when someone in Puerto Rico goes to a FEMA official and says we need help with food or water, they say go to the Internet. This is total incompetency. This is no different than George W. Bush's Brownie moment, Katrina moment. He doesn't care. He's more worried about debt, the debt of Puerto Rico and that they owe Wall Street. He does not care about the people of Puerto Rico. The press has given him a pass. We need a grassroots movement that, just like you did with the no nukes or the universal health care movement or the anti-VNR more movement, we have to demand, we have to put a lot of pressure, I'm going to end, on Congress, especially the Black Caucus and the Hispanic Caucus and the EU and the world community. And one man who is not a king of the world cannot control the fate of Puerto Rico. We're letting him get away with this, and their people are dying. This is a conscious, deliberate policy by the Trump administration, okay? It's what it is. We're letting them get away with it. This is one of the worst sins of this nation, letting our own citizens, die of thirst and food and not having medical care.
You know, it's just staggering. It's staggering. So let's
yes,
get clear. Has Tara joined us yet? Is Tara on the line? No, not yet. All right, Joel, can you text her and see if she's got the number?
Sure.
And
yes.
and make sure that we don't miss the connection again, because I know she was supposed to be on last week.
All right.
Harvard, our knowledge about this hospital ship, if they sent it down there with 800 or 900 beds to treat human beings, why is it parked out in the ocean and where people can only get to it by boat, and there's no shuttle service or whatever to get people to the boat? Is it supposed to just sit there and look pretty? I mean, what's the point?
Well, you know, the fact that at least over the first few days when it was there, when it was anchored there off the just a short distance off the beach, there were only like 7 or 8 people who got on there for care when they have all these hundreds more times of beds and qualified medical people. And that was just beyond me. My reading of it all is that the word just hasn't gotten out about the ship to the places that really need to send people to it. So it's a matter, I think, of logistics and related things that have led to this just impossible problem, one would think.
It's insane. I mean,
yes, sir.
We have how many ships do we have in the U.S. Navy? Do we have the logistical capability of moving people from the mainland of Puerto Rico a few hundred yards, which I assume is within distance, to this hospital ship? Do we have that capability? I think we do. What is going on?
People, you know, I mean, they're just not getting the word.
It's lack of political will. Michael Moore sent out a great email across the country about how we should send in the Army Corps of Engineers, the Army, the military. We have a $780 billion annual budget, okay? That's just the military. We're not talking about Homeland Security and the CIA, which is about $80 billion, maybe $100 billion. It's just because they don't care. The Trump administration doesn't care. Do I think that there may be a racial issue, that they are mainly Afro-Latino or brown people? Yes, I do. Do I think it's because the mayor of San Juan pleaded for help, and when one of Trump's officials, you know, basically said this makes a good news story, we're doing great things, and she said, news story, great news story, we're dying down here. Was a little bit of retribution? Yes, I think so. But he told Geraldo Rivera, you know, from Fox News, look, Puerto Rico owes money to your friends on Wall Street, and they haven't paid it back yet. And the way, look at how Puerto Rico, if you look at the way, you know, the system is designed there, it's designed for them to be in debt. They can't even declare bankruptcy, right? Because they're exempt from that because they're not a state. So this is colonial oppression 101, racism 101, incompetency 101. Apparently, there's FEMA and there's employees all over on the ground. It's not coordinated. I've been in government for 27 years. I worked for Congressman Conyers. I've been involved in disaster relief. I've worked on Haiti. I've worked on global AIDS. It ain't that hard, man. You bring in your generals,
You bring in the governor. You bring in your people on the ground. You come up with a plan, and then you work that plan. And you make sure if there's a clogged road, you get rid of it. I mean, this is not rocket science. I've been to Puerto Rico. You can go from one part of the island in 5 hours, right? And it's the people themselves who are feeding each other. That's what we heard yesterday. It's the people of Puerto Rico who are surviving. And what are we doing? What's America doing? We're not doing nothing that we could be doing because our president doesn't care. So that leaves the American people. The progressive movement has to put unrelenting pressure on our members of Congress. And what we are doing as a coalition, there's about 60 organizations involved in this. We are getting a sign-on letter that's going to go to Congress in the next day or two. And they're going to call on Trump in the House and the Senate to do an emergency mobilization like I just outlined. And Congress has to weigh in. My former boss, John Conyers, Dean of the Black Caucus, Dean of the Congress, he has to weigh in. Rahul Grijalva, Gutierrez, I could go on and on, but Congress has to weigh in and demand that the Trump administration, he's our commander-in-chief, does the right thing. That won't happen unless we put pressure on our members of Congress, and we're going to do that by having this letter out in the next few days calling on Trump to do the right thing through members of Congress. So we're fighting from the grassroots. We just need Congress now to weigh in, and if Congress can't do it, then it's got to be the United Nations or NATO or CETO or Doctors Without Borders. But what are we going to do to these people, man? Just let them not have power for 8 months?
Oh, man. You know,
it's ridiculous. Everyone should be very, you know, I'm a Buddhist and I'm a Jewish. I'm a Jew Boo. and Harvard knows me. It's hard for me to get angry about anything, but everyone, we should be in the streets marching and rallying. And these are American citizens. And the new normal in America, in my opinion, is like, okay, you know, 6 million homeless, that's okay. 30 million uninsured, that's okay. 3 years to transition to clean renewable energy, and we're still burning coal, that's okay. There's something wrong with the morality of this country. And there's these, you know, foundation granted groups that want to work in their silos. But I don't want to be negative on the show, but there has to be a solution that's got to come from somewhere. And Harvey, the article that you wrote about solarizing Puerto Rico, that spawned a whole new movement to solarize Puerto Rico. Your one article. If you did an article yourself about Puerto Rico, that'll probably spawn a new movement to address Puerto Rico, because I'll get it out to every member of Congress.
Well, I appreciate that, and I got to keep checking. If Tara is on the line, speak up. Tara, we're hoping you show up.
Yeah, I texted Tara. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's all we can do. Let's make sure she announces herself when she comes on. So aside from this ghost hospital ship, obviously, I mean, given the way Trump operates, you would think that they sent it down there and to make sure that the whole world saw that they sent this ship, and then they omitted the small detail of actually bringing people on. I mean, maybe it's a whites-only ship. What do you say?
Harvard, I'll let
maybe
you answer that one.
You know,
boy, that's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't know what to think.
A whites-only ship.
Yeah, you know, I mean, how do you...
Without repeating myself...
How does the United States of America, with a $1 trillion military that can, you know, move soldiers all over the world, send a hospital ship to Puerto Rico where people are dying left and right, park it in off the coast, and not bring people onto it? How did the first seven people get? Did they swim? Did the first seven or eight people that are on there, did they swim out to the boat? I mean, how'd they get there?
There has to be an independent group of members of Congress, celebrities, and journalists got to go to Puerto Rico with MSNBC and CBS, and they got to start interviewing people and go down there and give an independent evaluation of what's going on the ground. And if Jennifer Lopez goes, then the press will go because they're celebrity crazy, right? But members of Congress need to do what's called a CODEL, and that's when they take their staff, they go down there, and they investigate and what's happening, and then they come back and they do like an emergency hearing. But, you know, somehow the truth about what's going on with FEMA and what's going on with this lack of a coordinated effort to get electricity and food to the people. I mean, they need diesel fuel to run the hospitals. They don't have enough diesel fuel to run the hospitals. So let's go back to your premise about this big old ship out there. How hard would it be to get diesel fuel, I'm just curious, to hospitals to run generators? Now, if we could send tens of thousands of troops to Iraq and Afghanistan and build housing and set up hospitals and MASH tents, do you mean to tell me we can't do that for Puerto Rico and their American citizens? I don't believe it.
Well, Joe, you know what I heard the other day? What I heard the other day was that there's this one village where FEMA went to three times. They never brought any supplies, like
that's correct.
Water, like drinkable water, like
that's correct.
Food to eat, like
that's
diesel.
Right.
All they did was ask the people to fill out forms and that they'd be coming with the aid later. I mean, this is, to me, insane. I mean, I wouldn't think any competent person would see that as a solution.
Well, but
man, I mean, geez.
Go ahead, Harvey.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I was going to say,
Char, are you on the phone?
This is consistent with Trump's treatment of Mexicans, calling them rapists and murderers. Trump saying that our first black president wasn't a citizen. You know, you look at saying that the people who marched at University of Virginia, that they were good Nazis there. I mean, this is all part of who this guy is. You know, he's he wanted to take 23 million people health care away. Disproportionately, they would have been people of color. So this is very consistent with the way this guy thinks and acts. He is not pro-minority. This is deliberate, man, and he's pro-Wall Street. He's a corporate Democrat, and this is about money. He's made these statements. He said they owe us money, and we don't need to spend any more money. They can clean it up themselves. Now, I used to be a speechwriter for a congressman. I listened to words very carefully. Listen to what he says, because that's what it means. The next question is, what's the civil society going to do? The NAACP, Urban League, La Raza, you know, all these different organizations. We've gotten together and we're going to Congress and we're saying you're going to have to put unrelenting pressure on Trump and for him to do the right thing, because otherwise, you know, nothing's going to change. And this is why I do believe in democracy and I believe it works. But, you know, the question is, what can we do, Harvey, as a civil society? What can progressives do? We can't just meet in conferences and talk about, you know, our action plans. What are we going to do about it? That's what I'd like to ask.
Well, that's a great question. I want to check again. Tara, are you on the phone? Nope. Tara's still not with us. Well, you know, the question now is, first of all, I don't know. It's not just that this guy's president. It's just that he exists at all. I mean, you have to wonder about a species that could produce a Donald Trump, you know, a creature as utterly void of empathy, compassion, and common sense. And then to put him in a position of power is staggering. And it's every day is something new. Like yesterday, what he said to the family of this guy who was killed in Niger or Niger.
Oh, my.
You know, who can make this up? And the question is, how much of our species does this guy represent? You know, and how, as a creature, I mean, an extraterrestrial coming to Earth and seeing Donald Trump would probably just be tempted to wipe out the entire human species as being, you know, an aberration of evil, misguided, faulty DNA. And so now we have 3.5 million people in Puerto Rico who are just, well, describe it, if you could, Joel and Harvard, Joel Siegel and Harvard Ayers. Tell us what it's like in Puerto Rico now that, from your sources. Is there food? Is there water? Are people dropping dead? What is going on down there?
I'll just give a few statistics on Harvard, please, you know, fill in.
Sure.
So far, I know there's over either 37 or 57 deaths from people who had on dialysis machines who couldn't get care because the generators were turned off. And So there's a lot of deaths, and you know, because people can't get hospital care, right? That's number one. Number two, in terms of water and food, there's tens of thousands of people who still don't have access. Well, if they have access to water, it's not drinkable. It's got diseases in it. So now people are starting to get dysentery and get very sick and are going to hospitals. In terms of food, it's on the mountain. The mountain side is where they're having problems, where you have people who are feeding people themselves. There's a woman named Anna Blackburn, who's the head of the North Carolina NAACP here in North Carolina. She was on the call yesterday. And she just said that her mother is literally feeding people, you know, cooking meals from her stove, and then her family members go by foot, and they're literally giving people money, and it is so hot. If any of you have not been to Puerto Rico, it's like, it's burning, you know, 100 degrees with high humidity. They're just, because their air conditioners can't be turned on, they're in creeks, and they're in the ocean, and they're in the water, but the water that they're in is polluted. So it's still a humanitarian disaster. Has it improved? Yes. Harvard is right. Is the money that was just allocated by the Republicans, what's that going to go to? We don't know. It could go probably to alleviate a lot of the debt burden, but that's not going to translate into to water and food and generators and reconstruction or creating a solar microgrid. It's a humanitarian disaster, and people are dying right now, and they don't have the food that they need, and they don't have water, and they don't have the medical care that they need. And what in the hell is Trump doing about it? And you know, you can have 5,000 people on the ground, but if they don't know what they're doing because they're not being coordinated properly, it's like having a football team with a coach that never coached before, and I don't know if you run the wrong way to the wrong goal, right? And like Forrest Gump, because you don't have a commander-in-chief. Well, we don't have a commander-in-chief, and I don't think he cares. He showed that he does not care about people. He was ready to take 23 million people's health insurance away, and they would have died, a lot of them, so why not let the Puerto Ricans die? Harvard, I'm sorry to sound so gloomy, but I'm mad. What about you? Go ahead.
Well, thank you. There are people that are dying right now of the bacteria that's in this polluted water, which in some cases they're getting this water from very near a Superfund site, which is one of the most toxic places, and the water has actually touched all of the toxic chemicals, and when you drink that, you could well, and some of them are, dying just of the water that they're drinking. But one thing I know that I would really love to see, and I wish I could say I could go down there. I'm 76 years old. I'm not quite ready to trek to Puerto Rico, but I'm an organizer. I have a number of people who understand solar industry and all the solar power, and I could get them to go down there in a heartbeat. And we, as activists, need to really get it together. I hear about Elon Musk putting a group together. I mean, I've got volunteers will travel that I can definitely get involved down there. So I guess, you know, my question would be, from where I am, the most important thing is, how can I get those people down there and something organized that really allows us to take care of the major needs that the people have, including energy?
Well, what if we started, we heard a while ago that Elon Musk was sending in batteries and maybe some solar units. I haven't heard much about that since. I haven't heard much about anything else going down there to start solarizing the island. Has there been any movement on that?
You talking about Tesla? Tesla?
Yeah.
Tesla and Elon Musk apparently are moving in that direction. The question is, you know, can they do it by themselves? And there's been articles coming out about microgrids, that the microgrids in the Caribbean and Puerto Rico actually did pretty well. And we could do it right now through the Army Corps of Engineers. Harvard knows. Harvard's solarizing Boone, North Carolina, with his experts. He could take, he knows plenty of solar experts. I know plenty of solar experts. You do too, Harvey. We could go down there right now through the Army Corps of Engineers if our president would let it happen, or we just go down there and talk to the governor and just say, look, we're here to deliver electricity, and go down there with a lot of people and have Tesla and Elon Musk, whatever, and go ahead and start creating the grid. But the professionals are saying it's got to be a micro grid. It can't be, you know, like a, you know, your traditional solar farm where it's hooked up to power lines. It could be blown away again. But microgrids, and Harvard is an expert on, you know, that kind of technology. But the mayor of San Juan said she wants to solarize Puerto Rico, and if we did it now, whether it was rooftop solar, right, or microgrids or solar farms, then we could start turning those generators and get the electricity going. To bring power, I was told 85% of the country still doesn't have electricity. Might have gone down some, but they're saying it's going to take 6 to 8 months. How could a country that is, you know, has a gross domestic product of close to $16 trillion a year not figure this out?
Well, because they don't care.
American citizens now.
Yeah, they don't care. I mean, that's the point. They don't care. So, Harvard, you said that things are getting a little better. How are they getting better? Where are the resources coming from to make things even a little bit better in Puerto Rico?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, as you know. And I think if you talk to the people in the villages, it may be getting marginally better, but they haven't seen it yet.
That's right.
And Trump has control of a certain amount of the news coming from down there, and I'm sure he's doing everything that he can to make it sound better than it really is. And with these FEMA people saying, fill out these forms, I know you need water. I haven't even got a bottle of water to give you. But fill out this form, and 3 or 4 days we'll be back, and we'll see what we can do for you. Oh, throwing paper towels, my God. I mean, that's just absolutely nuts.
That was an insult, though. What an insult to throw paper towels? I mean, you know, come on, man. Paper, you got to throw paper towels. And, you know, another thing, Harvey and Harvard, that bothers me as someone who worked in the Congress for many, many years, we know we have this tax cut that we have to give to billionaires and millionaires because they got to buy more yachts and they have to have more Ferraris because they've only got 20 of them. In order to, if you're looking at the numbers of how you're going to pay for the tax cut, given Puerto Rico, you know, $40-50 billion of number and aid may not quite add up. If you want to give a tax cut to your billionaire friends on Wall Street, I really do think that has something to do with it. And there are a lot of Republicans who will not support. They didn't even support giving. I think there were 17 Republicans that didn't even support aid to the Houston and to the Texas area. I mean, these are real radical fringe, kind of crazy right wing types, you know. And but I gotta wonder. It's not just Wall Street and canceling the debt. I do think it has to do with the tax cut. That's what killing Obamacare was all about too, was making sure that there would be money, right? Save so you could give tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires, and don't think for a second that's not part of the calculus, because I think that it is. I'll tell you one thing, having worked with the Obama administration for 8 years, if Obama was president right now, trust me, none of this would have been happening. I worked with Obama and his people. I worked with his FEMA people. This wouldn't have happened. He would have already had emergency meetings. He would have flown down there. He probably would have overseen half of it himself. That's how Obama was, man. He's one of the greatest presidents. I've worked with Clinton. I worked with Bush. But Obama, he wouldn't have let this happen because Obama had a heart.
Look at what happened, Joel, in Haiti. They are not Americans. They are human beings that happen to not be Americans. And that job was done beautifully under Obama and his folks. And you said that you had had some involvement with that. Man,
that's right.
Yeah. And anything that Trump hears that's got the words Obama in it is just automatically going to be rejected. And it's really hard to get past that kind of prejudice.
Harvey, our Puerto Rican leader said that in the other storms that they experienced, that were hurricane, they weren't four or five, okay? They were Harvard will tell you when you say Hurricane 5, that means 500 times in Hurricane 1. People don't realize that. They said the relief efforts by the Army Corps of Engineers at FEMA were fantastic. It's just this particular one is the worst, you know, that they've ever seen. And I remember when I was in Congress, I was waiting and waiting and waiting for something to happen to Hurricane Katrina. Where was the aid? What were they going to do with the housing? We were all waiting, you know, for Bush to do something. And finally, I was like, the hell with this. I went to the Congressional Black Caucus Chief of Staff, and I said, let's just go ahead and draft our own bill, and let's do the relief ourselves. And, you know, I got lucky on that one. I drafted the first draft, and then I met with Pelosi's people, and bam, we got that bill. We got it passed with a Democratic majority. And I'm not saying that it was perfect what happened in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, but we did a pretty good job when we had a Democratic majority, you know, because, you know, W wouldn't do anything. And the only reason why I'm, you know, mentioning this point is right now it's Democrats in Congress and the House and Senate are going to have to step up. Senator Sanders has to step up. Got to step up. John Conyers, John Lewis, the Black Caucus, they got to step up. And you got two or three, Ilya Vasquez, I think, from New York, and Gutierrez. They're going on the House floor every day demanding, please help us. But unfortunately, a lot of members of Congress right now are raising their you know, millions of dollars for the next election campaigns, which is what they did when I was there 70% of the time. And then they got these young kids in their early 20s. I'm sorry to be so cynical. They mean well, but they don't have enough experience really to get anything done, which means it's kind of up to us. But I think it's really will be up to progressive journalists, Harvey, the kind of people that you've worked with for decades, might have to go down there and do some independent reporting. I don't see any other way we're going to get the message out unless we get progressive reporters to go down there and start doing reports. That includes Amy Goodman. Michael Moore needs to go down there. That'd be terrific. BET, I can go on and on and on, but I think that's what needs to happen. It's got to go into the TV set. We have to turn on NBC, CBS, and CNN, and ABC, and hear people suffering and watch it. That's when things will change. Is when people actually feel it in their soul. That's when I think there will be maybe more ramped up effort.
Well, let's hope, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, it's just appalling. Now, I do want to. You guys are so brilliant and articulate. I got to check again. Tara, did you ever call in? Tara, are you on the line? Okay.
How about Irene? Maybe Irena? Did Irena call in?
I guess not. Okay, well, okay. Listen, anyone out there who's called in, speak up, because we want to expand this. And you guys are just killing me here. And I want to talk about Northern California. You know,
sure.
This is another global warm situation. And also, there is starting to be pretty significant indication that this holocaust of a fire, I mean, there are 20 different fires. We're talking about 1,000 square miles of land here in Northern California, among the richest, most expensive, most fertile and lush land on planet Earth. The wine country, for God's sakes, burned to a crisp. And there's pretty significant indication starting to accumulate that the utility might have been responsible for these fires. Now, I'm not going to come out and say that they are, but there is a major piece. Well, I put a piece up about this at TruthDig. If you're interested, truthdig.com, my piece basically questions whether the fires were started by the utilities. And of course, we'll get to FEMA and link this to Puerto Rico. But the theory is that the Pacific Gas and Electric, which has had a terrible record over the decades of mismanaging and faulty maintenance, negligence of their infrastructure, which gets back to the central grid, that under the law, their poles, their power poles, were supposed to be capable of withstanding a hurricane. Now, a class one hurricane, the weakest hurricane, is 71 miles an hour for a minute. And all indications are that the winds in Northern California never got to that level, that they never achieved a hurricane, even a hurricane one level.
And that was interesting what you said, Joel, about a Hurricane 5 being 500 times the strength of a hurricane, class 1. But nonetheless, many poles fell over in weaker winds that they were supposed to have been able to withstand. And in addition, the utility companies are required to keep the underbrush clear from under the right-of-way for obvious reasons. If you got a sparking wire and you got underbrush underneath, you're going to get a fire. And PG&E was repeatedly questioned about whether or not they actually did that. And so the theory put forward in this major piece, very powerful piece that I cite in my article at Truthdig with the San Jose Mercury News, is that these poles blew down in sub-hurricane winds, and the power lines sparked, and the trees nearby, and which fell off, probably blown into the wires, which is also not allowed to be happening, and the underbrush under the wires caught fire. And you had 20 different fires. And they're not all out, by the way. I mean, some of them are only 50% contained. And 41 people died. And, you know, talk about the Holocaust in Puerto Rico. Anybody listening should Google fire Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa is one of the most beautiful towns I've ever been in. I've been in there a lot. I've ridden my bike around Santa Rosa. You know, it's a lush, well-to-do, comfortable, suburban, mostly white, but there's plenty of working people there of, you know, Mexican origin, plenty of Asian Americans. I'm sure plenty of Muslims, but the town essentially is the Northern California wine country town. It looks like Hiroshima. I mean, you look at pictures of this aerial photographs of the neighborhoods of Santa Rosa. For God's sakes, there is nothing left. You see block after block of completely leveled cinder. Nothing. And, you know, this fire, and of course FEMA now, 41 people dead, thousands of people in shelters. You know, I assume there's food and water, some, because of the state of California did jump in. And by all accounts, the communities pulled together. And I have had Mark Summer on the show who's been up there, and, you know, there was a lot of really powerful responses. It's a very wealthy community, one of the wealthiest communities in the world. So they had the resources of those who weren't burnt out. But you hear stories of people standing in the swimming pools for like 6-8 hours while everything around them burned down. And the swimming pools, by the way, did not heat up, so these pools were cold. But, you know, people who were in their houses, and at the first glimpse of a fire or a warning, if they didn't get out, they were dead. Evacuation times from houses in these fires were less than 10 minutes. I mean, you didn't have time to grab your family albums. And I'm sure that the death toll is just as in Puerto Rico. What's the official death toll in Puerto Rico right now? Do you guys know?
Isn't it, or so?
What is it?
I was told it was something like 57, but then I read another report in the New York Times that there's an unaccounted for, which is much higher.
I think that's true.
Plus, yeah.
There was a
well, Harvey,
point a couple days.
Could I ask a question, sir, about the fires that I just don't understand? I watch my most progressive of news shows on MSNBC, the evening shows. And they aren't even talking. The words climate change and the fires never come in the same sentence. It's like, are they totally ignorant about what climate change has done in terms of just drying out the soils to start off with as you go up and then drying out the leaves on the... I mean, it's like a tinderbox. And you're one match away from a conflagration, and where are our good people who understand, our good media people who understand what climate change is and what it does? Why aren't they blowing the horn?
Why isn't the nation's experts on... Harvard lives in the mountains, okay? He was a professor for 40 years at App State. He was one of our most important leaders. Doesn't matter whether it was mountaintop removal or saving our forests or but he is a expert on four. So I just want to just at least let your listeners know that Harvard really comes from this, not only as an anthropologist, but he is an expert on climate change and how it impacts trees and grass and the ecosystem. I'm sorry, go ahead, Harvey. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, much of the speculation on how this happened is that this is one of the scenarios, is that there was a wet spring in Northern California and they had a real boom in vegetation. And then they had a very dry summer. And so you had all this, extraordinary amounts of vegetation that dried out and was just waiting to catch fire. And what's amazing to me is that the news media really, I watched the BBC, which is generally better than the American media, one night, and they led with, this ridiculous Hollywood sex scandal. And then there was another story, I can't remember what it was, and then they got to the California fires. This should be, of course, people are, we had Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria, then the Las Vegas shooting, and now this, and then everything that Trump does every day. I mean, people are just really worn out. And the idea that this has not been covered is just astounding. And to top it off, and I did have Mark Sommer talking about this on an earlier show, the air quality in the San Francisco Bay got incredibly toxic. I mean, when you burn cities and buildings, you're burning glass, you're burning heavy metals, your computers, in some cases asbestos. The World Trade Centers were just incredibly toxic silos, and the idea that they were vaporized and put into the atmosphere. I mean, New York, Lower Manhattan should absolutely have been evacuated, and there are really serious questions about. We no longer expect anything of our federal government. Any sane government would have flown in hundreds of thousands of masks into the Bay Area so that people were not breathing this horrible toxic air. And Mark Sommer said that he said about 1 in 100 people in the Bay Area was even bothering to wear a mask, and they were all Asians because they're used to the bad air in China. And, and the hospital masks are no use. They should have had heavy-duty industrial masks in throughout 7.6 million people in the Bay Area. I guarantee you the cancer rate, emphysema, stroke, all these lung diseases, people are really going to suffer in the coming years or two.
Harvey, I've worked with MSNBC for years, and I've been very blessed and fortunate to produce some of their shows. And, Chris Hayes definitely knows the links between climate change and forest fires. That I know for sure,
100%. And so does Rachel.
Rachel Maddow. Rachel knows. Now, having worked with MSNBC for many years, I can also tell you that MSNBC is compromised a lot by corporate sponsors. Okay, I'm not saying all the time, but I know this for a fact. Number two, if the progressive climate action movement had its act together, and I'm not pointing any fingers, I'm just saying this is maybe a learning moment, there should have been a press conference at the National Press Club with Sierra Club, Friends of the Earth, NRDC, I go on, with California officials making that claim and linking climate change to the forest fires and calling for passage of the Jacobson Plan or climate change or whether it's a state bill or federal legislation. I think this really does show that there's too much fragmentation in the climate action community, and it's starting to get better. We've had two conferences, one in New York at NYU. We had another one at the University of District Columbia Law School that Harvard was very much involved in terms of funding. I was trained by Abby Hoffman and some of the best PR people.
Joel, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt, sir. And Harvey, I'm very sorry, too, but I've got to go testify before the Boonetown Council in about 5 minutes about our energy plan here in Boone to go 100% clean renewable energy in all sectors by 2030. And they're going to be waiting on me in there, and I'm sorry, I have to leave this call now.
All right. Well, good luck, and I hope you can convince
good luck.
Them. Bring up.
Let me just say before I go,
point out to them what happened in Northern California. This is the consequences
right.
of the central grid.
Thank
now,
you,
those
guys.
Fires almost certainly caused by the central grid, and if, and they, you know that it could happen in North Carolina too.
Well, actually, there are people right now who are afraid it's going to happen in North Carolina because it's so dry. I mean, look, the scientists, Harvey, predicted this years ago, right? It doesn't matter what book you can read. There's dozens of them, whether it's, you know, World on Edge by Lester Brown or any number of books who were written by, like, Michael Mann's books said that there are going to be fiercer forest fires, right? You know, the head of NASA, right? He predicted this in the 80s. So it's not like people didn't know this was going to happen. If you don't have enough rainfall, right, and everything is basically doesn't have moisture in it, and there's a lightning strike, it's like a Christmas tree lighting up. So we were warned about the effects of climate change and what it would do, but we didn't get off of fossil fuels. So the question is, when are we going to get off fossil fuels, 100% clean, renewable energy, the sun and the wind? If we don't do that, what Michael Mann said in Charlotte, North Carolina, just a few weekends ago, it's going to be more Hurricane 4 and 5 hurricanes and cyclones, more desertification, sandstorms, and these fires that you're talking about. I just got a call from a friend from San Francisco, and she was right involved when the fires were happening. It was horrific, what you were discussing. I haven't heard about it looking like Hiroshima, but, you know, I mean, that would be another article that I think would be great if you could write that. Someone take a picture. You might have already done that article. You know, this is going to keep happening until we have a robust movement to get off of fossil fuels now and transition to clean energy.
Well, there's no doubt that the incredible force of the three hurricanes, Harvey, Irma, and Maria, were linked to global warming. And there's no
right.
doubt that the fire in Northern California has been linked to global warming. There's just no doubt about it. And it all has to do with the centralized grid and the continued use of fossil fuels. So it's pretty obvious and easy
right.
conclusion here, which is we got to get off fossil fuels and we got to switch
right.
to decentralized microgrids. And hopefully Puerto Rico, we can make it happen there and get the place rebuilt with renewable energy. You know, of course, a lot of people are leaving Puerto Rico. I mean, I wonder what's going to be left. And, of course, you know, Trump and his casino cronies are going to come in there and buy the place up for cheap and start putting up, gambling casinos and resorts and whorehouses, and they'll turn it into everything that Cuba was before the revolution. And
but you're talking about like a Batista?
Batista, of course, Puerto U.S.
Well,
They don't have to worry about a third world dictator there now.
That's what, in New Orleans, when I was working on Hurricane Katrina relief, the plan in New Orleans was for the lower ninth ward in the African American community. They just wanted them to leave so they could gentrify and rebuild. And as you know, a lot of them have not come back. And even the victims of Hurricane Sandy in New York and in Jersey, this is the New York Times, there's thousands of them that still don't have housing. And what we're really talking about is the need for what Bernie Sanders called a citizens' revolution. And the reason why this we have to organize differently than we ever have before, you can't – I think there's 1,700 green organizations or clean energy, 1,700 NGOs. They have to work together because how we organize now is contingent upon whether or not we save our species, whether or not we save our planet. And we have to fund organizers. We have to give them, you know, they can't be working part-time, but we have to have a unified 100% clean, renewable energy movement that's got a lot of money, that has a peaceful but militant and radical in its objective, which is these utility companies got to be pressured to get off of fossil fuels. And one of the things I'm working on right now in North Carolina with several organizations is to demand that our regulatory commission here regulate Duke Power, our largest utility, that they just purchase the
solar and wind in their purchasing agreements. Just don't use coal and gas. And that's what it's going to have to come to that. And Michael Mann says we have 3 years, Harvey, to get that going. And then Lester Brown, one of the world's preeminent climate scientists, says we have about 10 years to the bulk of it. And the question is, you know, how far are we? I would say not very.
Not far. We got a long way to go. Long, long way to go. Joel Siegel,
but we can do it.
We got no choice. We either do it or we die. Joel Siegel, great having you on. How do people get a hold of you, and where do you want to guide people for guidance?
Sure. First of all, I'm honored to be on your show, Harvey. I can be.
Pleasure to have you.
Oh, man, yeah. It's Joel.
So how do people get to, we're about to go out here, so how do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I was giving my email.
Yeah, whatever website you want to send them to.
Oh, it could be NorthConnaClimateSolutions.org. That'd be the website.
Okay. All right. So, I want to refer people to my current article about the California fires. It's at truthdig.com. Truthdig.com about whether the California fires were set by the utility. If you're a sports fan, you might want to look, and a fan of the First Amendment, might want to look at my piece at progressive.org about Colin Kaepernick. I'm urging the Green Bay Packers, which is the only public-owned team of all the major sports teams, and they should all be public-owned. All these sports teams should be taken away from these billionaire jerks. That's at progressive.org. Because I am a part owner of the Green Bay Packers, so I'm hoping that they hire him. Listen, Joel, it's been great to have you on. I wish someday we'll talk about how great it's been that Puerto Rico went totally solar, and that Northern California, I believe, will go totally solar. I think that Santa Rosa and the other, there are 5,700 buildings that were either destroyed or damaged by the fire up there. And I'm going to bet
that I'm an optimist, Harvey. I believe in, you know, that there's always a way to solve a problem if you do it with love and logic. So we can solve our problems. We just got to come together and be,
I think in Northern California, the money and the politics are on our side. So Northern California, I think, is going to become hugely solartopian. And we'll talk about that again next week. Thank you, Joel. Next week in Solartopia. Thank you, guys, crew, and we'll be back.
When the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden,
don't you know we're going to have a solartopia, 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 don't you know?